Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the United Religions Initiative, Global Indigenous Initiative, and Now Time Radio's presentation of Indigenous Voices. Indigenous Voices features Indigenous artists, activists, wisdom keepers, and spiritual leaders raising their voices to bring messages from an Indigenous perspective on cultural heritage, women and children, the environment, our relationship to Mother Earth, preservation of sacred sites, human rights, spirituality, religion, and interfaith. The United Religions Initiative is a global grassroots interfaith network that cultivates peace and justice by engaging people to bridge religious and cultural differences and work together for the good of their community and the world. To join the call during Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio, call 424-243-9656. You may also live stream or listen to the podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/nowtimeradio.
This is Audrey Scott Williams, your host on Indigenous Voices. My guest today is Chief Phil Lane, Jr. He is an enrolled member of the Yankton, Dakota, and Chickasaw First Nations and is an internationally recognized leader in human and community development. He was born at the Haskell Indian School in Lawrence, Kansas in 1944, where his mother and father met and attended school. During the past 44 years, he has worked with Indigenous peoples around the world. He served 16 years as associate professor and founding chairman of the Four Winds International Institute at the University of Lethbridge in Alberta, Canada. He has won numerous awards. In August 1992, Phil was the first Indigenous person to win the prestigious WinStar Award, presented annually by the late John Denver and the WinStar Foundation to a global citizen whose personal and professional life exemplifies commitment to a global perspective, operates with awareness of the spiritual dimension of human existence, and demonstrates concrete actions for the benefit of humans and all living systems of the earth. At this event, in recognition of his lineage and longtime service to Indigenous people and the human family, Indigenous elders from across North America recognized Phil as a hereditary chief through a sacred headdress ceremony. He is also a member of Protecting and Restoring the Sacred Cooperation Circle of the United Religions Initiative.
Recently in Northern California, there were 33 wisdom keepers that gathered as a result of the Hidden Seeds Global Indigenous Initiative of URI. And Chief Phil was our reigning elder and provided wonderful leadership and guidance as we move through 33 wisdom keepers from six continents coming together as one. Chief Phil Lane, what was the importance or significance of this gathering, and what do you think was one of the most important outcomes?
You know, to be able to be with other Indigenous people who still are living close to Mother Earth, and to find that really our Mother Earth is our teacher, and that our teachings are really way, way more similar than different. In fact, at the very core, the spiritual principles and teachings are one. In fact, I think that if we would all go back to that time when every one of us as a human being, as a member of the human family, sat before the sacred fire that nourished us all at our beginnings of Mother Earth, we'd all rediscover our indigenous roots to this beloved Mother Earth. And I think that's what was so present at each of the different indigenous relatives from around the world unfolded their ceremonies, seven ceremonies during the first day. And all of us could relate correctly to each of those ceremonies, even though we were from different places in Mother Earth. For me, one of the really enlightening, heart-changing, paradigm-changing understandings I came to was when our sister from Ghana shared about the impact of the papal bulls of the 1400s and the resulting doctrine and discovery, and how this gave a divine license, so to speak, for Christian nations to seize and enslave everyone who wasn't Christian. I think it's important to remember that these papal bulls were issued and accepted by Christian nations prior to the Reformation. So this was all the Christian nations who considered themselves Christians, who essentially were empowered or given the license spiritually to colonize the world. And, you know, I've seen it before. I've heard about it for more than 40 years that I've been doing this work here in the Americas. But it wasn't until I began to really reflect on the realization that, you know, why did the French believe they had the right to invade and colonize Vietnam or the Dutch Indonesia or the Belgians the Congo or the French Canada for as long as they were there or the English Kenya or Singapore or Burma or Myanmar, we call it now. Or we could go on and on and on and on, everywhere on Mother Earth. Why did the Spaniards feel they had the right to colonize and enslave the people of the Philippines? I mean, if we look everywhere where the world was colonized and separated. And this is very important to understand, I think, for our understanding of what's happening in the world today. I mean, the Middle East, it was included in this right to seize and enslave and do whatever you wanted to do in countries that were not Christian. In fact, one of the papal bulls, they used the word Saracen or Muslim. And what happened, of course, here in Canada, the United States, Mexico, these new nation states that were formed on the foundation of colonization. You know, so many tribes and nations were separated into different countries. So along all the borders, every place in Mother Earth where this colonization occurred, tribes and nations were separated and are at the very foundation. A lot of the conflict going on in the world today and the world in the past. So it was really quite a wake-up call for me. And I think that the decision to work with other efforts around the world and bring this issue for resolution to Pope Francis is one I believe that will have success, will have victory, because I think that its time has come. And with it, we'll have to really look deeply at how the doctrine of discovery is still enshrined at the foundation of the various nation-state legal order who were the colonizers, and how this has to be addressed, as well as we've got to ask ourselves the question as well, where did all these resources, just from the Americas alone, all the gold and silver and countless other riches that were stripped away from the people here, where did they go? Where are they today? What kind of recreation needs to happen about that?
Yeah, it's a very complex issue, isn't it?
Very, very complex.
I was listening to a friend of mine talk about it from the legal perspectives, which you're just beginning to get into. How do we break this into steps that are doable? And I think one of the things that was very impressive with me in the press release that came out, that you were very much a part of creating of the gathering, the word denounce was used, asking the current Pope, Pope Francis, with really feeling enthusiastic about that, given what his path has been since he's been the Pope. But how do we use language that allows us to begin to at least make inroads in getting an apology? And so I thought that it was very, very wise of the circle to choose the word denounce, and now for us to begin to work on how to get an audience with the Pope, present our documentation or proclamation or letter of request. And I feel personally very optimistic that as we negotiate all of that and come up with a letter and a means of communication that is very thoughtful and far-reaching, I think we will achieve our goal. Do you think so?
Yes, absolutely. I think that the relative who was from Argentina, who knew the work and knew personally the Pope Francis before he became Pope, really felt as well from his experience with the Pope in Argentina when he was a bishop, that in fact this was something he would be open to. And as well, I think that we have to give credit to what's happened so far. I mean, for a Pope to sit down and talk with victims of ecumenical sexual abuse, to address that, to really make the stand that the Pope has made of poverty, personally go out and at night and share food with those in need. You know, his statement about the environment, which he referred to the beautiful lands of the Americas, particularly South America, and said that the destruction of these forests and these very, very unsustainable practices that are used being used by extractive industries are modern-day sin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kinds of things that he's done really indicate if there's been any time in history where at least there's a door open for this to happen now.
And I think an apology such as this sends a very powerful beginning message about people in our worldview, and especially indigenous people. It certainly gives us an opportunity to begin to rebalance some of the issues or concerns that have been plaguing Mother Earth, our relationship. And that's what I see, Brother Phil, is important about this. It really gets down to reestablishing, rebalancing our relationship, not only with one another, but how we are with the Earth, how we even look at the Earth in relationship to the cosmos. You know, in my heart, I see this as a real victory for relationship understanding as we go forward.
Yes, and as well, it's a real action. Mm-hmm. Most people who are really, if you look at them, are indigenous people. I remember when I was 12 years old, I used to go and pick strawberries, and I was very active. With my parents would go, and we'd go to the Umatilla Reservation, the first Yakima Reservation, back to the Dakota, to the Standing Rock, and the Sioux Reservation, Hantuan, over to Rosebud, all through there. And so I felt very strongly about my indigenous identity. And so when I saw these relatives from Mexico who were definitely, without question, indigenous, I approached them and said, you know, I'm an Indian too. And, of course, they really recoiled. This was back, I was 12 years old, that was 1944. So that was 1956.
Mm-hmm.
And they recoiled. No, we're not Indians. We're Spanish. And, you know, another friend like Hitchhiker Europe just to see how in the world this whole thing happened. I went to Spain, and I went to Spaniards. So I always told my relatives, they tell the kids, well, you know, relatives, I give you great love and respect, but I've been to Spain and those Spaniards. But what sometimes we don't realize that, you know, if you go to the Philippines, for instance, that the Spaniards were able to colonize many, many of the Filipinos along the coast, but they weren't able to penetrate into the mountain areas or down towards Mindanao to the degree other places. So you have Filipinos with just fully complete indigenous physical characteristics who don't view themselves at all as indigenous people, and yet if you went back and you traced back, you'd find they were from the Philippines at the time of the Spaniards, and of course later colonization by the U.S., and really look at their relatives in the mountains as indigenous, but we're not indigenous. That is where I think we, in order to come to the understanding that we're one human family, we have to decolonize and realize that really, I mean, all of us as human beings, if we really clear away our heart and mind and get back to our relationship with Mother Earth and one another and the Creator, we'll find we are one human family.
One of the things I wanted to say, too, as we're moving forward in our conversation on issues of indigenous, what is indigenous, who is indigenous, I wanted to also recognize the work of many organizations on behalf of the doctrine of discovery, having that repealed or seeking apology. I wanted to make sure our listening audience is aware that there are many, many organizations that are involved in this initiative, and they can go online. You can visit, there are many different websites that you can visit to educate yourselves and your communities about why this is an issue. Getting back to the question about who is indigenous, I remember one of my friends saying to me, well, indigenous actually means from this place, and we're all from some place. So how do you feel about that in relationship to someone that might ask, why is it important for indigenous people to meet when we're all indigenous? Can't we all meet together? What is unique or special about indigenous people having a voice that is specifically unique to indigenous peoples around the world?
Been migrating, you know, for thousands of years, I mean, way, way back in the process of moving around Mother Earth. But I think that what indigenous, in at least our prophecies about the Ringer Condor and Eagle, the indigenous peoples of the Americas, whether or not you see the indigenous people being here when there was a continental drift, or whether they came, as was demonstrated in the Kon-Tiki expedition from the south, or whether they came across the Bering Strait. However you look at that, the fact is there's indigenous peoples who are living on this land who've lived here for a long, long, long time. Time before recorded history in terms of books, but just as intimately recorded through oral tradition, and who still have the connection to the land, to the use of the sacred plants for healing, and to the sacred teachings, and to the dreams and visions that occurred in different locations or different sacred places to give them a relationship to that particular place. You know, whether it be Devil's Tower or the Black Hills or other sacred places that people have related to, indigenous people have related to for thousands of years. You know, there's that dimension of that wisdom, and that's why, you know, our prophecies are really clear about this, saying that the indigenous people of the Americas have a special role to play, and that is that they will become so enlightened, they will illumine the world. Illumine has a spiritual dimension to it, to illumine the world. And by the way, that doesn't mean that every other human being doesn't have a contribution to make, because we all do. But, you know, I look over the last 500 years, and you look at the loss you know, I think a good book that really begins to look at the research, the current research about the population in the hemisphere, for instance, in the Americas, 1491. And in 1491, it really clearly documents there was probably about 100 million indigenous people living here prior to contact with the European military. And, of course, when you see the incredible loss of life, you know, even into the 1700s due to disease and that impacted people, they didn't know what was happening, really. And you see them as well, the atrocities committed through colonization, and you see this huge population of 100 million people, probably reduced to somewhere around 5 million across the hemisphere. And yet you see now this rising, this incredible rising of indigenous people everywhere, not just in the American civilization of the world. You can see that the only power that could be motivating such a transformation to the spiritual power, because certainly have not had the skill, weapons or material things that could be the source of such a revitalization, a renaissance, so to speak. But that is happening. So that's not, I'm just saying, it comes from an incredible reservoir of spiritual knowledge and wisdom and strength and prayer, and the fact that we've held on no matter what with deep faith.
That was one of the things, Brother Phil, that I felt so strongly when we were gathered that first day under the grape arbor. I mean, the symbolism of things that happened in this short period of time, this compressed time that we were all together. But under that grape arbor, and I'm sitting there just in the energy and flow, I'm thinking, my goodness, one, the amazing prayers that were being offered and the heart space that you could feel just opening up. It was tangible. I remember thinking to myself sitting there, something is happening in the world as a result of this time that we're together, and it's beyond any of us to be able to make, you know, even be able to articulate it. But perhaps it's that tapping into that reservoir of prayers that have been uttered for, you know, 500-600 years, if not more. But I definitely felt that energy of exactly what you're saying.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the seven issues that emerged from our Global Indigenous Initiative really had a big impact on the issues that we're going to be addressing at the International Indigenous Council of the Americas in Panama in February of 2015. It had a great impact. And, you know, coming to those conclusions as we did together from six continents, finding such a coherence, such a unity on what we felt, you know, it was very easy to translate that into the topics for sunset and unified action that are being held animal to the college later following that 18th and 22nd of February journey to the four locations of Kuna Yala for the 90th celebration of the Kuna Revolution on February 25th, 1925, as well as into other Aymaras.
Let's talk for a moment about some of those seven issues that were brought up or points that were brought up, because I think one I know is important to you. I mean, all of them are, but one specifically speaks to you is the youth. I know you had, you know, Tiger was there with us, your son, and we also had Takaya there, the two representing the next generation and sort of looking over what we're doing and saying either we're doing it well or we're not. I thought that we were very fortunate that they were there to bear witness to all as well as to participate. But the passion that came forward about the need for us to connect in a much more heart-informed way with our youth, to bring them forward with us to listen to them because many of them have the answers. Could you speak to that for a moment?
You know, what's so important for the older generation to wake up to is the fact that over 7 billion people are on Mother Earth at this point. Out of that 7 billion, the majority are 25 and under. And in our indigenous communities in Canada, the average age here in Canada, which is a country whose median age is 42 in terms of general, in First Nations community is 25. Eskimo communities to the north is 19. And that same age, median age, goes in the United States. When we get to Mexico, the average age in Mexico is 25. So south of Mexico, many of the countries south of Mexico, the average age is 19. And so the prophecy about the generation that's emerging now, or on Mother Earth, is really the hope of the future. Leave these young people, because of the revitalization and cultural, spiritual foundations of their not only indigenous cultures, but as well as their capacity now to understand things through various visual technologies, social media, is really transforming very rapidly the entire heart foundation of what's happening here on Mother Earth. And it certainly is the hope of indigenous people and the human families.
And relates very deeply with our connection to our environment. I mean, there are certain environmental issues. I know Takaya spoke very passionately about what's happening with the waters and how in her generation she's seeing that destruction, and it's not a future thing for her. It's a very present moment issue for her that she can't utilize the waters. The fish in the waters are dying. The water's not drinkable, and it's drying up. So I thought that our young people brought forward for us to consider, one, we need to look at this holistically. We need to look at, again, back to that relationship. What's our relationship and how are we expressing and experiencing that relationship with the earth in terms of our stewardship? And also, Tiger brought forward how the young people are connected to this internet, this web that allows them to connect all over the world, and they're finding creative ways to communicate and to create movements to make change. I know I kind of threw two topics in there, one the environment and the second the use of the technologies that are now available to us. Could you speak to both of those?
Sure, sure. So when we as young people went down to the Twin House Lodge in 1975, visit with these elders who come down from Alberta, there was a direct prophecy given to us by Ed Bernstick. He spoke both Dakota and Cree, but Abe Bernstick. And he shared in Cree, which was translated in English by Eddie Bellrose. He said, "You young people will live to see the day when the everywhere spirit will be made physically manifest on the earth. When that day comes, you'll be able to see and speak to people on the other side of Mother Earth instantaneously." He went on and on and on and on. He described the internet perfectly. I mean, perfectly. And I had no idea, nor did anybody else, what he was speaking about until, you know, the internet. And, you know, the Navajos and Hopis, I've talked to their elders, and they even have it more graphically. They said a spider could weave a web around the world, and everybody would be able to communicate across this web. And they said during this time that we're living in now, anything that had been covered up during the spiritual winter time, the symbolic rain of the snow, would be uncovered. That nothing could be hidden anymore. That in time, it would all be revealed. And we can see what's happening. We can see all these manipulations and behind the table deals and so forth, and bathroom deals are all being put on the table now. We cannot build a new foundation for a new relationship without being rooted in trust, passion, and honesty, and compassion, and those kind of qualities that are at the core and heart of any indigenous community or any faith community, any place in the world that is living in harmony and respect with all members of the human family.